Hello, and as 2020 thankfully draws to a close, can I welcome you to the last of this year's weekly podcasts for the aerospace industry in Africa and the Middle East. That's it for the year. I'm Alan Peaford. It does seem incredible that it was 40 weeks ago almost that we started this podcast to try and keep a bridge of what's happening in our industry. We've seen some gloom for sure, but I hope we can also bring some optimism as we leap into 2021. I'm going to be talking to Adrian Wilcox, the CEO of Kenyan carrier Aberdeer, a successful ACMI operator. And the airline is looking for new aircraft to boost the fleet as it opens new centres of operation in the DRC. Steve Nichols will be taking a look at JSSI, who brought power by the hour to the business aviation world. And he talks to Pascal Barhouche, the new head of business development based in Dubai. Another power business is MTU, whose MRO and aftermarket division has seen some exciting developments during the pandemic. Chuck Grieve looks at that. But first, it's the news headlines from Marcella Nethersole at the Times Aerospace News Desk.
Hello, and here is this week's aviation news from across the Middle East and Africa. A Saudi Arabian company has placed an order for more than 100 of the world's first heavy-lift unmanned freighters. The order has come from Riyadh-based Arabian Development and Marketing Company, and if US manufacturer Sabre Wings program goes as planned, deliveries could begin by the summer of 2021 for certification by Saudi regulator GACA. The aircraft is the Sabre Wing Regal B, which can deliver up to 4.5 tons of cargo at ranges of up to 1,800 kilometers. It is designed to carry standard airline cargo containers, two LD1s or LD3s, or three LD2s. ADMC told Arabian Aerospace that it is seeking to build an assembly plant for the aircraft in the Middle East and will be training Saudi pilots and engineers to operate the fleet of freighters. Uganda Airlines has taken delivery of the airline's first wide-body aircraft, an Airbus A330neo powered by Rolls-Royce Trent 7000 engines. Cornwell Malaya, CEO of Uganda Airlines, said that the efficiencies of the aircraft together with the Rolls-Royce Trent 7000 engines will help deliver a great value offering to its passengers. The aircraft has been named Mount Elgon. A barrier to Air Zimbabwe re-entering service has been lifted, with the airline due to resume flights this week. This follows a decision by the country's cabinet to recognise the airline as being a national strategic importance and taking on the airline's debt of more than $300 million. According to local media sources, this will allow creditors to be repaid and allow the airline to develop its restructuring plan towards profitable operations. CH Aviation has reported that Tunisian cargo airline Express Air Cargo is planning to expand its fleet, with the addition of a B737-800 and a B767-300 P2F converter freighter, in order to add more scheduled cargo flights to Central and Western Africa. Acia Aero Leasing has delivered a further ATR-72-212 LCD freighter to Solenta Aviation. The aircraft will be based in Gabon and operate routes for the DHL West African network. Gogo is keen to establish its 2Q in-flight connectivity solution on more Middle East airlines, following its purchase by satellite giant Intelsat. Intelsat recently purchased the commercial aviation arm of in-flight connectivity company Gogo in a deal worth more than $400 million. This saw Intelsat taking over the operation of Gogo's 9 leading airlines with more than 3,000 connected aircraft. Dave Bijur, Gogo's Senior Vice President of Commercial, said the company has continued to be very active in the Middle East and maintain a presence in Dubai. Abu Dhabi-based Royal Jet has incorporated HAECO Cabin Solutions, novel in-flight package storage systems, allowing cargo to be carried in the passenger cabin of its fleet of the Boeing Business Jet 737-700 aircraft. IATA has announced that Kamil H. Al-Hawadi will be appointed IATA's Regional Vice President for Africa and the Middle East, effective of the 1st of March 2021. Al-Hawadi succeeds Mohamed Al-Bakri, who will become IATA's Senior Vice President for Customer, Financial and Digital Services. And finally, as 2020 draws to a thankful close, we are pleased to announce two major industry live events which have been confirmed for 2021. Firstly, Aviation Africa will move to the new dates of the 7th and the 8th of July 2021 at the Kigali Convention Centre in Rwanda. Organisers Times Aerospace said they hope and believe that with the arrival of the vaccine, the COVID-19 virus will have declined sufficiently that people can have the confidence to travel and attend live events by the second half of 2021. And the Dubai Air Show is set to return for its 17th edition on the 14th to the 18th of November 2021. A range of new features for the event have been confirmed, which include a strong focus on cutting-edge technologies used in the aviation industry. The new technology showcase will provide a platform to exhibit the latest tech and will also include the key conference programmes on topics such as 5G, cybersecurity, artificial intelligence and blockchain. Well, that is certainly something all of us in the industry can look forward to in 2021. It's back to you for more optimism, Alan.
Well, as promised, we have some positive thinking coming through now. We're joined by Adrian Wilcox, the CEO of Abadair Aviation, an airline almost 20 years old and based at Wilson Airport in Nairobi. That's right, isn't it, Adrian?
It is, Alan, yes. It's 20 years since we incorporated the company, my father and I. He'd been out in Kenya for a long time beforehand. He came out here in the late 60s and pioneered helicopter operations out here then. But I came back after a stint at British Airways in London in 2002 and established Abadair then. Initially, we were just brokering and leasing deals and selling aircraft. And then we got our first AOC in Kenya to support South Sudan in 2006, following the signing of the peace agreement there in 2005.
Well, Abadair operates ACMI charters. And just to explain, that is when the airline supplies the aircraft, the crew, the insurance, the maintenance and so on for a full turnkey service. And looking at the Abadair website, I can see you've been working a lot in oil, gas and mining sector, humanitarian for organisations like the UN and the World Food Programme, as well as government missions. So how has your business been affected this year with the COVID pandemic?
It's obviously affected, you know, the whole industry and the whole sector significantly. In terms of Abadair Aviation and the group that we have with the multiple AOCs, we were actually in the process of restructuring anyway, following some strategic decisions that we made about how we're going to route fixed wing operations through our Ghanaian AOC and how we were going to focus on rotary operations in our Kenyan AOC. So we were in this process of rebuilding when COVID hit. And whilst we were able to take advantage of some of the opportunities, chartering aircraft that were chartered from us for movement of precious items such as money and gold and the like that still needed to move, which was historically being moved in belly cargo, when those networks across Africa were suspended in quarter two, primarily in quarter three, we did pick up some charter work, but as I say, we weren't firing on all cylinders anyway. So in a way, it's helped us to slightly fine-tune that restructuring and the repositioning activities that we were doing. And we're feeling confident and buoyant about 21 in light of new contracts that we have coming online, as well as some of our ongoing expansion activities.
Well, one thing that did fascinate me about Abadair, Adrian, is the multiple AOCs. And I gather that as well as your Kenya and Ghana bases, you've got a new one coming through in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah, we do. We've operated multiple AOCs in different countries before. We've had two AOCs in Ethiopia in the past. But when I say we've had two, we've teamed up with a local partner and provided a lot of the capability to get the AOC because of foreign ownership restrictions in Ethiopia. And over a period of time, those kind of ran their natural course. But we see DRC, there's no foreign ownership restrictions. And we as Abadair Group are the majority shareholder in that, along with some very valuable and proactive local partners. But we see DRC, our new office in Kinshasa, as being a very prospective market. It's obviously very large, which is sounds silly, but it's a very key, you know, it's a key attribute for a good aviation market, as opposed to Liberia where we were before. It's just by virtue of the size of the country means that you can build up the hours that you need to make the operation viable. But there's obviously poor infrastructure. New president, there's a new regime in place, and we expect that with the new president is going to come change there, which is going to attract more investment in infrastructure. There's some big hydroelectric power projects. We see that there's going to be more mining activity there, and the UN has a significant presence there.
So Adrian, let's talk about the fleet and your plans for this expansion. I know you've got the Embraer 120s and the 130s for now, but what are the plans going forward?
So we're in the process of refleeting at the moment. So we're looking to be adding our first, probably a Dash 8-300 and Dash 8-200 or 100 within the next 3 months. And what those will do then is we will register those aircraft along with our Embraer 110s. So we have three Embraer 110s, two of which are registered under our Ghanaian AOC. So we'll add those to our Ghanaian AOC, and then we will operate those either in Ghana, as well as in contracts that we secure outside of Ghana. The idea being that we're looking to almost have a two-tiered AOC within the group. So I mentioned earlier that we want to have the fixed wing in Ghana and the rotary in Kenya. But then new AOCs, such as the one we're starting in DRC and future countries such as Uganda and Tanzania, what we will look to do is to secure most that will provide most of the capability out of our tier one AOCs, the Ghana or the Kenyan AOC, with a, let's say, probably a minimal local fleet in terms of registration, etc. We'll make sure that our local entities are fully local content compliant in terms of personnel that we employ on the ground. But in terms of the aircraft themselves, it's going to be primarily sourced through our Ghanaian fleet or our Kenyan, with the fixed wing fleet focused on the 110s and the Dash 8s. And then we are, from the special mission platform, we're probably looking at the Diamond DA-42s and DA-62s. And then on the rotary fleet out of Kenya, we are starting with the H-125, the B-3, the Squirrel, which is tried and tested across Africa and a fantastic performer in terms of a multi-mission single-engine helicopter. And then moving up to the BK-117. So we'll look to move into the BKs during the course of 2021, which will give us twin-engine capability and IFR capability. And then during the course of the next 12 to 18 months, then also looking to step up to the Bell 412s.
So Adrian, the Christmas and New Year break just about to start for a lot of people. Are you going to be working solidly this year?
From an operational perspective, we're actually going to be quite quiet this year because of this restructuring, which is, as I say, probably a bit of a blessing. We're going to keep our powder dry and make sure our batteries are fully recharged, ready for a big push next year, both in terms of our traditional clients, as well as the last mile logistics that are going to be required as and when the vaccine and associated logistical requirements start being rolled out across Africa. And with our multi-AOC footprint, we see ourselves as being well positioned to be able to support that. So we're working with established logistical partners to start, you know, understanding what their requirements are going to be now so that we can put that in place. We don't necessarily think it's going to be as early as some people are suggesting, but definitely during the course of next year, we're going to be ready to ramp up our you know, airborne last mile logistical capabilities to be able to support needs as required.
Well, Adrian, thank you for giving us that insight to your expansion plans. And we look forward to reporting on the Aberdeer growth over 2021. And may I wish you a happy new year.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah, have a very happy Christmas. All the best to you and the team, and stay safe.
Well, that was Aberdeer Aviation CEO Adrian Wilcox speaking to me from Nairobi. Well, now, Jet Support Services, known as JSSI, has recently appointed Pascal Bahouche as Director of Business Development for the Middle East and India. Based in Dubai, she is responsible for managing strategic sales and support plans in the region. But who is JSSI? And how has COVID-19 affected the business aviation sector? Steve Nichols finds out.
Jet Support Services recently appointed Pascal Bahouche as Director of Business Development for the Middle East and India. Based in Dubai, she is responsible for managing strategic sales and support plans in the region. But who are Jet Support Services and how has COVID-19 affected the business aviation sector?
JSSI was founded about 30 years ago. We do our core business is hourly cost maintenance programs, which some people call it power by the hour program for the business aviation industry. We do cover airframe, engines, and ECUs. We serve business jets and VIP operators to turboprops and helicopters. Among the benefits of these maintenance programs is the financial aspect, where you increase the residual value of the aircraft enrolled under these programs. We do have about 70 technical advisors who work globally, and they do supervise all the maintenance events and support our customers all over the world. Now, if you are an aircraft owner and your aircraft is enrolled on a JSSI program, we would definitely be stabilizing the maintenance costs, and the owner would be assured that his enrollment would allow him to manage the scheduled as well as the unscheduled maintenance event costs. We do have in our portfolio about 10% of all the business jets in the world. That's about 1,000 aircraft, which are enrolled on a GSS-5 program between engines, airframes, and APUs. Besides the hourly cost maintenance programs, Steve, we do have the parts and leasing as well as the advisory services. The parts and leasing was launched about 5 years ago. It's purely business focusing on buying and selling aircraft parts and components. In the last 5 years, the company decided to start expanding. The first company that GSFI acquired was Conklin and Detective, that provides operational cost data to aircraft owners and brokers. The recent company that we acquired was Trackware, which is the MRO software solution that provides maintenance tracking. All in all, with all this full portfolio, I can say that we provide support at every stage of the aircraft life cycle. Well, I've been in the aviation sector in the Middle East for about 14 years now, and I can say that the business aviation is very important here in the region. This area is very strategic for GSSI. There's always a great potential to expand the sector, and I can already start seeing the willingness of growth. Now, we do have a reputable presence, and GSSI has its name in the region. We have crossed already about 6-7 years, a long way in the region, and this is vitally important that we build on this sector.
How has COVID-19 affected the business, and how have you responded?
When you compare 2020 to the results of 2019, we see how different that is. So, in fact, GSSI charges based on annual utilization and the hours flown per month. So, we saw that flight hours in March and April were 75% down on 2019 comparison. Now, over the spring and summer months, we have seen some signs of recovery with some repatriation flights or medivac. So, with flight hours approximately 25% down by the end of Q3. We do expect that to drop slightly, but not significantly. And we already started seeing some pickup in flight hours. Now, through the pandemic, the SSI has continued to give back and help the clients. For example, in late March 2019, we introduced the COVID-19 financial relief plan. And that was put in place as a great initiative support for our customers here in the region. We suspended all rate increases for all the types of aircraft through September 29, 2020. And the customers had a choice between either having a 25% reduction on the annual minimum flight hour invoices or to have an extension of the payment terms to 90 days on the annual minimum flight hour. So, you know, all these financial relief plans, we were found a lot of appreciation from our customers. And they saw how they saw the flexibility that the service of GSSI provides. And at the end, you know, we're in this situation together. So everybody has to have a share of sacrifice, help, and support the industry to survive.
Well, that was Steve Nichols with Pascal Bahouche with GSSI in Dubai. There's some good news on the MRO side of civil aviation too. MTU Maintenance, one of the big global players, has seen something of a business revival in the second half of the year, with the V2500 and the Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan engines leading the way. Our MRO editor, Chuck Grieve, has the details.
MTU Maintenance is approaching 2021 with optimism. The engine specialist is forecasting double-digit growth in its MRO business, a bit of seasonal cheer for the entire industry. I'm talking today to the company's Vice President for Marketing and Sales in the Middle East and Southeast Asia, Sami Ben-Karim. Sami, welcome. You opened your Dubai office just as COVID-19 was starting to disrupt everything. I'm sure there will be people who tell you, oh, bad timing, rotten luck. What do you say to them? How is your Middle East business doing?
Thank you, Chuck. Actually, my response would be exactly the opposite to what we expected. As a matter of fact, we have even enhanced our representation in Dubai. So we added a further team member in the Dubai office in the middle of the crisis, which was in July. The reason is we have a strategy in our MRO approach in the industry, and this strategy is for opening regional sales offices. This includes so far Singapore, Dublin, and Dubai. So our target is to be proximate, to be near to our customers. This was by nature a necessity in the way MTU is doing its approach to the MRO industry. And it has proven to be the right step now in the crisis. As you may know, the first moves that will happen or started to happen are rather local or regional. And so we are now very near to our customers when they need us and when we would like to talk to them about their plans, which are now obviously changing with time. So this is actually the right step and has been the right step, and we will continue following this path in the future.
Well, that sounds very optimistic. Now, a year ago, we were hearing that aircraft owners and operators were having difficulty finding MRO slots, especially for the popular narrow-body engines, the CFM56 and V2500. Now we're hearing the opposite. What's your observation on that?
Jack, I'm glad you considered both the operators and the owners of the equipment, because that's actually now what we are seeing, that in the context of the crisis, both lessees and lessors are in continuous dialogue what to do and how to maneuver. This resulted in the middle of the crisis in necessity to have a partner like MTU to make the engine assessment to support the customers, whether owner or operator, how to best deal with the engines. So we have seen some early lease returns, which needed special work scopes, which needed a very good technical guidance, which we delivered. However, going now further in the 2020 period, we saw an earlier, of course, recovery of the narrow-body operation. This was driven by the fact that markets like China or even the Middle East, the local operation, the domestic, the regional operation was able to restart again, compared, for example, to the wide-body operation. This also resulted in higher demand, especially now in the third and then more in the fourth quarter of the year for V2500 and CFM56 MRO support.
Your senior managers were talking a couple of months ago about seeing a cautious recovery, and you sounds like you're seeing that as well. They expect to end 2020 with revenues down just 4% compared with 2019. Now, that's better than many in the industry. What's driving this?
On the MRO side, we are benefiting from a bright and vast portfolio. We are covering 30 engine variants. This helps us to be able to attract business volume, whichever the engine type and generation is. This is the first advantage we see. But also a key driver was our strong position in the narrow body aircrafts, whether it's the classic variants with the V2500 and the CFM56, both 5B and 7B, or the next generation engines like the LEAP and the Geared Turbofan, the Pratt & Whitney engine. The reason is these new generation engines have been requiring some retrofit programs, some quick turn, some work sponsored by the OEM, which we were able in our network to support. So this helped our growth to continue in this year better than what would be expected from the typical MRO market. For the future, we think that our large customer base, which includes cargo operators, it includes lessors, it includes OEMs, will help us to maintain this ambitious growth perspective.
Let's talk about growth. Just last February at MRO Middle East, MTU was talking about global growth strategy. So looking ahead, how do you now see the strategy playing out?
MTU is sticking to its expansion plans. Of course, there are here and there revisions in the schedule, especially with the target to follow a clear way of safeguarding liquidity. But the priority will be to continue planning and supporting an organic growth. So investment in new programs, investment in new facilities like our Serbia facility for piece part repairs, which will join our network as well in the future. All these aspects prove that MTU is believing in the industry. We think that the business is now affected. That's clear. Nobody can predict when and how the recovery will take place. However, we think that the requirement to fly will come back again. And we start to see it now in the narrow body sector for the regional and domestic operation. So MTU is believing in this growth and is still keeping the plan to invest in an organic expansion of its capability and capacity.
That's very promising. Specifically, the Middle East MRO, what do you think is ahead for that sector of the industry?
The Middle East has been always a very important market for us. It has special requirements, mainly driven by the harsh environment, which is requiring a special touch on the engines, whether it's designing or repairing the engines. And also because it has been a market very much based on relationship, which we have established in a quite strong way. So we will keep our focus on serving this market. We believe that the new generation engines will be part of the plan of the majority of the airlines. It's also a market where a lot of key players are flag carriers. We believe that those flag carriers will maintain a certain positive look on the future. However, of course, there are items under challenge, like the fact that a lot of airlines in the Middle East have been basing their business model on serving international operations through hubs in the Middle East, so more wide-body driven operation. So we will see how this will develop, but we are prepared for either options, especially through our strong relation and network with the key players in the market.
Thanks, Chuck. Well, that brings us close to the end of the year. Although we may be down after the year we've had, we have to believe that it's going to be better in 2021. Analysts are beginning to see positive signs. The return of the MAX will see a pickup in deliveries. MROs will be busier bringing aircraft back, and I guess training establishments will as well, as pilots have to get back up to speed. Emirates has taken delivery of its newest A380s, and according to insiders, most of the A380 fleet will be back in service by the third quarter of 2021. On the geopolitical front, the accord between the UAE and Israel has opened more doors and routes, with other Arab countries like Bahrain and Jordan signing agreements. And this week, North Africa's Morocco has joined in as well. I'm watching closely the situation in the Gulf. Hopefully, we'll be hearing soon that the way will be open for Qatar Airways to access Saudi Arabia's airspace once again. The GCC Council meets on January the 5th. But I guess there's some diplomacy to be done before then, but it's exciting nonetheless. And for us here at Times Aerospace, there's also exciting news. Next month, we'll be going live with our Times Aerospace TV channel, bringing you a two-weekly news magazine programme. And look out too for a new monthly defence video programme. Well, I look forward to hearing from you in the industry about ideas for those programmes. So, after 39 weeks, of this podcast, it's time for us to sign out and give you our very best wishes for the season, and to wish you a healthy, a happy, a prosperous, and above all, a safe new year. And until we're back together again in 2021, keep flying high. Goodbye.